The reading now from the book of Job. There was once a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. That man was blameless and upright, one who feared God and turned away from evil. One day the heavenly beings came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them to present himself before the Lord. The Lord said to Satan, "Where have you come from?" And Satan answered the Lord, "From going to and fro on the earth and from walking up and down on it." The Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job? There is no one like him on earth, a blameless and upright man who fears God and turns away from evil. He still persists in his integrity, although you incited me against him to destroy him for no reason." Then Satan answered the Lord, "Skin for skin. All that people have they will give to save their lives. But stretch out your hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will curse you to his face." The Lord said to Satan, "Very well, he is in your power. Only spare his life." So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord and inflicted loathsome sores on Job from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. Job took a potsherd with which to scrape himself and sat among the ashes. Then his wife said to him, "Do you still persist in your integrity? Curse God and die." But he said to her, "You speak as any foolish woman would. Shall we receive the good at the hand of God and not also receive the bad?" And in all of this, Job did not sin with his lips. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. You can perhaps probably already tell that I've been a little under the weather by virtue of my voice. The bad news is it's only going to be worse in about 20 minutes. But I take it as something of good news, perhaps what Mark Twain said about Wagner's music: it's better than it sounds. This morning's lesson from Job, that ancient book of Hebrew wisdom, which has consoled and perplexed and even angered the faithful for so very long, comes to us all these many centuries later. Simply put, the point of Job is to tell us that we are to remain faithful in and through all circumstances. We can never really know the reasons why bad things happen to good people, but we must remain faithful to God even when we wonder if God is really faithful to us. But because the tale of Job paints God out to be so distanced from the suffering of creation, like a chess master who is willing to sacrifice a pawn for the sake of something greater yet unseen, Job's answers to the problems of suffering can be infuriating for we who have to live and say goodbye on the board amidst all the many terrible things of this world, like cancer and COVID and the suffering of children. Job's God is at first detached and then defensive and not much willing to ever disclose. So I can resonate with the words of Virginia Woolf, who wrote, "I read the book of Job last night. I don't think God comes out well in it." I'm not a fundamentalist, so I'm under no compulsion to try to preach the book of Job like it's a book of history. I don't think Job was a real person. Therefore, I don't feel compelled to try to defend the idea that the real God was out there wagering with Satan for his soul. The book of Job is not history. It is poetry and fable. And its point is about the limits of our human comprehension. A reminder, as someone once said, that the opposite of faith is not doubt, which Job had plenty of, but certainty, of which Job in the end had very little. So it defeats the purpose of the book to say it tells us this is how God is, this is how God acts, even if God doesn't come out so very well. We need to read with more imagination than that. We've been reading Job with imagination in our Sunday school class this past month. Our Sunday school teacher, Christopher Schleicher, gave us an imaginative dialogue between Job and God, which Chris called the verses that the translators lost. How Chris came into possession of these verses is a mystery hidden with God in Christ. But here's the dialogue. Job, "God, why did you let this happen to me?" God, "The devil made me do it." Job, "What?" God, "Yeah, it was all in fun at first, but things got a little out of hand." Job, "A little?" God, "Yeah, my bad, really. But if I gave you an explanation, you wouldn't get it anyways." Job, "Try me. I want to hear this." God, "Well, I don't have to. In case you forgot, I'm God and you're not. So sit down and shut up and stop yelling at me." Job, silence. God, "Hey, really sorry I had to Godsmack you just now, dude. And about killing your family and taking all your stuff, you're really a good guy. I can fix this. I can make it right, even better than before. It will be fine, really." No, God doesn't come out very well when we overly literalize this story. So let's free ourselves from this kind of nonsense in order to understand what's really being said. What's the real message of the book of Job beyond the fable? The book of Job is a countervailing voice in the scriptures which helps us balance our theology. Much of the Bible is very transactional, basically saying, do right, get rewarded, do wrong, get punished. But Job reminds us life doesn't always work out that way. The good don't always get rewarded. The bad don't always get punished. And there's not always a good reason for everything that happens. Sometimes it just happens. Cancer happens. COVID happens. The suffering of children happens. And the brilliance of the book of Job calls us to think on what it means to be faithful to God and faithful to life, even when the rewards of good and godly living aren't always guaranteed. Curse God and die, Job's wife tells him. And why not? I kneeled at the bedside of my own uncle, who asked me to pray that he would die because he was in such agony. It was not living, and I prayed without blushing. But most of us aren't ready. Job wasn't ready. He would have to choose to die just as he would have to choose to live, and the choice was his. The choice is always ours. September's Sunday school study of Job coincided with the tragic death of a 15-year-old boy whom I had to bury back in Lubbock. He officially died of COVID, but he's been in a wheelchair for the past 5 years after an accident in a souped-up golf cart left him paralyzed from a traumatic brain injury. So many said, there must be some reason God did this. Who said God did it? That's what I asked at the funeral. The mother and the father are shattered, of course. But they have two other children. So they're trying to figure out how to go on living. Day by day, sometimes minute by minute, they're choosing life. Maybe that is the thing that astounds me most about Job. He lost everything, family and possessions and status. Yet again and again and again, he chooses to go on living. My friend Carl Travis is on hospice himself and recently wrote an article for the Christian Century about living amidst dying. He told a story about a church member who was suicidal in his church. She was miserable and raging from a bad divorce and estranged from everybody in the world. Carl said, "You've known glass is half empty kind of people." Well, she had thrown the glass at the mantle. His counsel as a pastor to her was unconventional. And I don't think I would have had the guts to give it. But this is what he said. "I understand that you want to die, and truth told, no one can stop you. But what's the hurry? You have the rest of your life to end your life. Why not wait around and see how really awful it can get? There was silence. Then she smiled. Carl said he thanked God. And she went on living. And in time allowed herself to even love again. I can't tell you for certain the meaning of the book of Job, but that's got to be close. At the beginning of his famous essay on the myth of Sisyphus, Camus says, "The most important philosophical question is, why not kill oneself?" He then reflects on Sisyphus being made to push that rock up the hill again and again without any success. Why did he stay at it? Camus' conclusion? Because the point is to live. In other words, in the face of all of life's unfairness and irrationality and absurdity and the defeats, there is still something worth living and hoping and reasoning and struggling for. And that is the point. Or, as I said at the funeral for that young boy, the price of living is always dying. And the price of love is always losing, having to say goodbye. But we're willing to pay the price anyhow. We choose life, and we choose love anyways, because what else is there? Fred Craddock used to say, some preachers talk like they've gone all around God taking pictures and know everything there is to know. That's the problem, Job says. The pictures are overexposed, too much light, and not enough shadow. There is a lot of shadow in this world. There's a lot of mystery, and some of it is agonizing. But I take it on good authority what Carlisle Marnie wrote to John and Lou Ann Claypool in a sympathy letter written after the loss of their daughter, Laura Lou. Marnie, the pastor, to the pastor said, "In times like these, I fall back on the notion that there is a lot that God has to give an account for." There is freedom in those words if we will receive it. And not just the bromides people tell us we're supposed to believe when it comes to God and to suffering. There's a lot that God has still to give an account for. That's another way of saying there's a lot we still don't know. We'll have to hang around to find out. In the meantime, though, maybe we should give God the benefit of the doubt. in the face of all that is yet unaccounted for, in the face of cancer and COVID and kids getting hurt in golf cart accidents and about a million other bad things that can and do happen to good people or a good society, we could just give up, curse God, and die. Or we can choose to go on living. We can choose to go on working and hoping and struggling and daring to push that rock up that mountain step by step one more time. And in the hard, scrabble, wounding, limping, and grievous journey we call the life of faith, which is really just another way of saying life itself, maybe, we can even come to a point of belief. And one day, hear ourselves say what Job said so long ago. I know that my Redeemer lives, and in the end will stand upon the earth, and I will see God for myself. With my own eyes, I will behold God, and not as a stranger. Brothers, sisters, and kindred, let's wait and see. Let's wait and see. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit, one God, and Mother of us all, and all of God's people then said,